Oh, such a good question.
Well, what do you come with these questions? That's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker, and my guest this week is Ernie Bray. Ernie is the brains, the heart, the muscle, the strength behind ACD Corp. And I'm going to let him tell you the story, but he and I met on when we were both talking at an event for IA Path, and we'll get into that as well. You've heard Chris Stanley on my show before. Mm-hmm. He is an amazing individual. Chris hooked the two of us up, so shout out and kudos to Chris. But Ernie, welcome to the show. I'm excited for us to have this conversation because you and I, we come from the same bolt of cloth, and we both get it. We both know the good, the bad, and the ugly of business, as we were talking about on off air.
Well, hey, Ben, it's great to be on the show, and I'm excited to be able to help, you know, give the listeners some insight about kind of my story and some of the challenges it is to build a business. So, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Hey, my pleasure. So let's get into this. Why don't we tell the guests, first of all, who is ACD? Where did it come from? What was the impetus for starting your company? Where are you today? And then we'll get into the vision.
Sure. So my background really comes back. I was a athlete in college. I played college basketball. I was going to school, getting a degree. But at the time, I didn't even know what I wanted to do. I come from a family of teachers. My dad was a teacher, my uncles, aunt, grandmother. So everything around my family was really, the origin was about education, the importance of learning, building knowledge. And I even thought about becoming a teacher, but I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So then For some reason, I just ended up kind of lost, didn't really know what to do. And I ended up getting a job ultimately in the insurance business, insurance claims. So I got into auto insurance and I just started out as a basic adjuster. And I started to work my way up and I became, I did adjusting for a couple of years. And then I moved into the field and started doing field auto damage appraisals. And I worked for AAA and Progressive and really learned a lot during that time. But it was during that time, I kind of just, something inside of me, I just felt like I didn't really want to be in an office. You know, I just didn't really want to be working for somebody. And I had this drive, this entrepreneurial drive inside. And I felt like I needed to do something else. So ultimately, over time, I said, you know what? I see a niche in here. This is the time then when the auto insurance industry was literally doing things with Polaroids, 35 millimeter photographs. Everything was so paper-centric, and this was kind of the time when things were starting to change. Digital cameras were coming out, things like that. And I knew there's like, wow, if you could take digitization, you could mesh that with all this technology, you could streamline a lot of this process and really make it very efficient. So then around 2003, I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to leave the industry, and I'm going to go out and take the leap and try to find that niche where I think I could help insurance carriers streamline the process and take this auto damage estimating and put the adjusting for it, make it streamlined. So that was kind of the creation of it.
Now, did you have a technology background? We're about the same age. And we look at it, we both saw technology rushing towards us like this freight train. My degree is in political science. I ran the mainframe at University of Victoria in the 1980s. I saw the early days of the internet coming at me mm-hmm. and moved into the marketing industry in the 1990s. But you sit there and go, I had no idea where it was going to become. I mean, I remember when a 486 was a fast-ass computer. I mean, how did you have this impetus of saying, wait a second here, things are really changing. Like the curve is coming. We can cross this chasm from dial-up to the high speed, from analog to digital. What was the impetus that actually saw you sit there going, wait a second here, there is this cataclysmic change?
Well, you started to see a lot of things changing. Now, you want to hear a kind of a funny story. It's a fun story, actually. My brother, Brian, during this time when I was working at the insurance carriers, he's a big fan of country music. And he started a website, and he actually built one of the first country music online websites that actually did country music reviews. And this is the era of CDs, and you're listening to these, the DVDs, and I should say CDs, of music.
Sure.
And he started this site, and I helped him out. And what he was doing is he was able to work with some of the artists, and he was starting to play little sound clips, digitize that. He'd ask the artist, oh, hey, can we just do that? Oh, sure. And then we would interview artists and do things. He could just sort of see the power of the internet. And I started to say to myself, wow, this is sort of where the future is going. It's not going to be a DVD, CD. It's going to be, things are going to be digitized. So I was helping him out during that time for about 3 years, as sort of a fun side project for him, helping him out. And I started to see, wow, there's opportunity where the internet was starting to take off. If you look back and you see like the story of like Elon Musk, for example, he was starting sort of like, I think it was a company that was just basically sort of like a directory online, you know?
Right.
He started out, that was right at 96, 97, the start of the internet when it started to really take off. So it was around that time I started to see, while I was working at the insurance companies, hey, things are moving to the computer. They're moving to online. And that sort of was the impetus of like, okay, there's things moving ahead. By the time 2003 came along, I've already had that kind of knowledge behind myself. Well, hey, this is the way of the future right here. And in this industry, the insurance industry, it's really historically slow to change. So I would say sometimes it's behind other industries by 5 to 10 years sometimes, because this is a slow moving industry. So I knew there was an opportunity to jump in and really take that digitization part and then really move it forward. So the things that I did with my brother and seeing what was going on the internet, always being in the technology area, I already kind of had an idea where things would kind of go.
Right. And let's get into that, because the fear of technology and the fear of change, because your clients are not Mary Jo consumer. It's the large insurance carriers. Those are the people that actually hire you and use your product. You've got a series of customers, and we'll get into that, but you need to have the carriers on board. You need to have the Allstates or the, I don't know which exact companies you work for, but the large insurance corporations on your side. So how did you get them as a startup entrepreneur in a new field, be able to sit there and say, guys, this is the way things are going. Here's how we can help you. Do you want to get on board? Because that's a scary change for them. Yeah. You know, that is, I mean, let's face it, insurance is a heavily paper-based industry.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So to get them away from that paper must have been a scary challenge and a mind shift change for them.
Well, yeah, it is. And we even had customers right from the get-go that actually were telling us, hey, you know, we don't even have email. We don't allow our staff to use email. If you want to work with us, you're going to have to send us hard copy photographs with paper weekly and FedEx documents. I'm like, in FedEx it to us? I mean, that was outrageous. But here's what we did.
Counterintuitive to what you were trying to do.
I know. It was crazy. So here's what we did. We said, okay, how do we get your foot in the door? How do you do that when you're an unproven business and you haven't really proven it out? So what we did is we went to smaller and mid-sized companies. We would go in and we pitch to them. We would show them, we would ask them about their, how they're currently doing their process. And we provide services at ACD. We also provide technology. So what we did is we would go in and we would lead with our service solutions, which right. was field appraising and IA networks, vendors that we have in our vendor network. We would lead with that because we knew that's what they needed. So we would go in and we would go with a basic service proposal. They would see that. They would be willing to try that on a pilot level. And then when we would do that, that's when we would pop open the laptop. We would pull up overhead projector and screen and everything and say, hey, look, here's how we manage the process. And when we popped that thing on the big screen and the claims managers would see that, they were like, wow. Ooh. They go, wait a minute, you're just doing services. We use all these other companies doing services. What is this? And we'd say, well, this is actually our proprietary internal solution system we use internally to manage the process. By using that system, we're able to give you faster claim cycle times, better communication. And they would see it and they go, wait a minute, could we use it? And we're like, well, of course you could use it if you sign up with us. So then we would use that as the lead in, obviously with the services. They would see the technology, they would be amazed. So then we started to build a following that way with small to mid-sized carriers who would just join up and we would get them using the technology. So once you're able to do that and you got a few people on board and they started to see and validate what you're doing, you had now people who would be advocates for us, people who would be out there spreading the news. And you know, this industry is like any industry. People start to know people within your confined industry. We started to build a positive momentum that way.
And that's great, because what you've done is you created a proof of concept with an easy entry point for them. They sit there and say, okay, we already know we need independent adjusters. We already know that we need people feet on the ground to be able to help us process these claims. But there's 100 other companies that do that.
Right. Yep.
By opening up the laptop and showing them the back end and showing them how you can be make this process faster and more efficient, you differentiated yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and I think the key too is just like you're saying, Ben, is differentiating yourself is key. In a market where it's sort of commoditized or whatever, the differentiator has to be that value. Just like in any business, value can sell a lot. And when we're adding value adds and things beyond what they were expecting, such as detailed data and reporting and the ability to manage large amounts of claims right at their fingertips, not having to chase down asking statuses on what's going on with a disparate group of a whole group of network by email. They can manage it all in one place. That streamlined their office. I mean, you shave off phone calls, time, wasted time trying to go in there and put a lot of information in that's right at their fingertips that they would normally do through email. When you save time, time is money. And the extra value was really something we could sell on top of just that service.
Right. Here's the added catch to this, and it's the training and onboarding of software, because you have two different things. People are going to sit there and say, oh, the technology is going to take my job. That's what I'm hearing more and more today. The technology is not going to take your job. No, the technology is not going to take your job. The technology is going to allow you to do your job better. But the training must be involved, especially in the early days, in the 2003, where computers, for the majority of people, were still not on every single desktop, was still not on every person's mind. Not everybody was trained in Microsoft Word or Excel or how to dance around DOS or Windows. Actually, it would be early Windows at that point in time. How did you move past that chasm of trying to get people to understand this is a new way of being able to do this, a new process, and getting the end users within the company? You might have sold the CFO and the CTO at that time. Mm-hmm. But how do you get the regular people on board who are actually using your software to make it easy for them?
Okay, yeah. So with the technology we built, the platform we built, if people in the insurance industry are used to a lot of common terms and fields and systems, so they're used to using some of a basic core system in their own insurance company. A lot of times these systems were green screen, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Green screen systems, you know, AS400, I think was, or those type.
Oh, yes, I remember them well.
There were basic systems, but what we were able to do is make it very intuitive. I think a lot of people, when they talk about our product out there, they say, hey, it's intuitive, it's easy to use, the learning curve is almost zero. You just get right down there, you start using it, you know exactly what to do. We've been very focused on making it very easy for the adjuster. Keep it simple, but the information right at their fingertips. Another way we would do it too is adjusters have a lot of work on their plate. There's no doubt. Adjusters are busy. They're hit from every angle. They have to take recorded statements. They have to make liability determinations. They have to be able to take an enormous amount of phone calls. They have so many things going on besides just the auto physical damage portion of the claim that we focus on. So for us, we were able to, like when I told you about the small companies, we would go in and we would do the pilots with maybe a group of maybe 3 to 4 adjusters. We would get them set up. We'd be there for the training. And what would happen is they would see how easy it was. And before you know it, they would tell their fellow adjusters in cubicles next to them, hey, try this out. This is making my job easier because now I don't have to call up. I can cut and paste, or I can just transfer this data right into my core system and I get updates, and it saved them so much time. The key really is we focused just like a laser on getting adjusters to really enjoy using the system and make their job easier. And if you can make somebody's job easier every day, I mean, hey, they're going to be happy.
Right. I want to take a little detour, and it's a detour that I talk about anybody whose business transferred through this, and that's 2008.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because every single business was affected by the economic downturn of 2008. So how did that economic downturn affect you? Was it, for some companies, it was extremely positive. It allowed them to differentiate themselves and build relationships and solidify stuff where their competitors couldn't. And a lot of people, it really hurt because, you know, business and relationships they had just went away because companies just went away. So How did you weather that whole, you know, 2008, 2009, in 2010? And what did it teach you? You know, and what are the lessons you learned moving forward from that?
Well, for us, I think in some ways, we're in a business, in an industry that if people are driving, there's accidents that happen, you're going to be, you know, you're still going to have a client base out there because there's claims that need to be handled.
Right.
But even though then there was fewer miles being driven and there was concerns about that. But I think what we did at the same time, you know, by the way, also a lot of investment into businesses wasn't happening at that time, you know, so it was harder for a lot of startups to get out there and start launching with venture capital and all that. So we being a bootstrap company that has been focused on from the beginning, being a profitable company, running the business correctly, building a solid, real business, we really just kept our nose to the grindstone and really just focused on, hey, what are we going to do that's going to keep pushing forward our mission, which is a great product, great services, great technology. And really, we heavily went out there and just kept going to the carriers and marketing. And with our services, we were that company that companies would go to. And so really for us, it was, we're in an industry that, you know, really needs what we offer. And just by offering that compelling product, we just grind through it. And for us, we continued to grow even during that time by just offering what we do.
And you touched into something, touched into venture capitalism and startups. The startup community, 75, 80% of them fail within 5 years. I don't know what the exact number is, but the numbers are huge. And a lot of these failed startups are funded by the venture capitalist world. Do you think that because you did not get into the venture capitalism, because you bootstrapped it, because you were focused on your own dollars and cents and not reliant on capital coming from an external source, do you think you were more careful? Do you think you were more vision-oriented and far more focused on the success of the company? Or do you think that that's a fact?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it this way. There's two philosophies out there, and you can't say either one's wrong or one's better than the other. It's just how you want to build your business. And there's businesses out there that are heavily funded. And, you know, as you could see in the news today, there's companies that got valuated super high and then the valuations come down because are they really software companies? Or are they just tech-enabled services companies?
Are they vaporware?
Yeah, you know, do they even have a real product? I mean, the bottom line is, you know, that's the whole game that, I mean, hey, if some people, there's one way to go that way. But I've just built it from, like I said, just the bootstrap mentality. You don't spend money you don't have. You would reinvest money back into the company. You focus on your customers. You just build a business. Some people, hey, there's people that, hey, Ben, they've laughed at me and said, hey, you're doing it the wrong way. You should go out and do this. Go raise a bunch of money. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with doing that. If that's what you want to do, there's nothing wrong with people who go that way. But the thing is, I have just sort of focused on that bootstrap mentality of, you know, focus on being profitable every year, watching what you spend, reinvest in the company and grow it. And I think, like I said, it's really just two different mindsets. And like I said, there's no right or wrong answer to it. You just have to do what you feel comfortable with as a business owner. What's your goal? What's your mission? I mean, some people push more toward an exit or an acquisition, or some are focused on a long-term vision. And I think here's the thing. This is just my personal view, but I think this way, if you get into business and your goal is just to start a company and then quickly try to flip it and turn it or sell it real quick, I just feel from my perspective that it would be hard to really build it the right way for myself because you'd be looking for that exit. And I think when you look toward the exit, you lose sight of what you need to be focused on, which is building that great product and the great service. Because I'm a believer, you build the foundation first. You build the business. And if that's something that later on you want to do, then that's great. But you got to have a viable product. You got to have something that people are willing to pay for. And if you're already thinking for the exit, you're not going to focus on the now.
Yeah. And I agree with you 100% on that. It's that long-term vision that allows you to build products that really serve your clients. But let's into that a little bit in terms of, because technology isn't cheap. R&D is not cheap. Iterations and innovation is not cheap. And, you know, when you're a company that is growing and you are a growing company, and this is an amazing year coming up for you guys. It's been an amazing year this year. You know, you're constantly having to iterate. There's constantly new technologies. I'm 5 years ago or 10 years ago, no one was thinking iPads. Nobody was thinking iPhones. Nobody was thinking mobile first technology. You know, so you're always having to be iterating and innovating and researching and development and all that kind of stuff. And none of that's cheap. How do you keep up with it? Because it seems to be something that you can go wide and deep and there's rabbit holes that you can jump into that you're never going to get out of. Right. How do you keep focused on this is what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing? Like, do you have a mission vision statement that anchors you for that? And how does that help you?
I think the key is when you're running a bootstrap company and you're obviously in the technology space, you have to be efficient with your capital and how you deploy it. because you could go down rabbit holes, like you said. And I think there's a lot of trends out there. AI is one of the biggest, I think, areas of hype right now out there. Everybody's throwing the word AI, but in reality, a lot of it's truly just machine learning. And we're not at nobody's out there really at the thing of true AI. So here's the thing where the mindset I come from. The industry in insurance is a workflow. It's a process. And what we do is we focus intently on what are the technologies that we can add in that are going to add real return on the investment. What's that ROI that's going to be help that adjuster along or really be efficient for the carrier, not try to get caught up in the hype. And I think when you invest in the hype, you spend a lot of money and throw it down the wrong area and invest R&D, you're going to go off the rails. So the key is, hey, don't get caught up in a lot of the trends. Focus on where you can invest your resources into things that are going to add true value to that user. So like I said, especially when you're bootstrapped like this, you have to be efficient with capital. And that's why, you know, our tech team and our development team, it's all about what's really going to add value to what we're doing. And you're looking several years ahead, but if you don't want to look so far ahead and get to the point where you're using technologies that are not really going to help the customer.
Yeah, because that's the big thing is the technology going to help the customer? That is absolutely critical. Is the iterations that we're doing, is the next direction that we're going to go truly and absolutely going to help the customer better than what we're doing today?
You're right. Because you could see, I'm sure like you see the self-driving cars, they're making progress here and there. But the thing is, they're not ready for prime time yet. And here's the thing. Some of these things are great, but if you read the news, you would think we're almost ready for flying cars the next day. You know, the hype is out there.
My son, who's turning 16, believe it or not, can't wait for the self-driving cars that he can just get in, tell it where he wants to go and just drive it. He doesn't have to worry about it. Yeah. They terrify the heck out of me. They really do. That whole technology.
And with so much technology and so many little decisions that have to work almost like the human brain, there's so many different points of failure. And over time, will it get there? Probably.
But absolutely.
But at this moment, we got to live in the now. And like I said, we were saying before, you got to be able to operate in the now and still think about the future. You know? Yeah,
I think healthy enough is for us to always be looking 3 to 5 years out. If we're looking 3 to 5 years out, anything beyond that, we're stargazing. We're truly and absolutely stargazing. That's the what if type things. And those are the big, hairy, audacious goals are the 10 and 20 years out. But in terms of keeping focus and keeping an eye on business, we truly need to be looking at 3 to 5 years old. So let's get into that in terms of cases. And let's bring that back to culture. Mm-hmm. Let's bring that back to company culture because that's what culture is all about, is being able to communicate not only where you are, but where you're going. So what are the things that you focus on? Because companies grow. I'm sure you're a far larger company than you were in 2003. The question is, how do you keep that culture alive and how do you keep the vision alive to let the new people know where you were, where you are, and where you're going?
Yeah, I mean, any business, culture is so important. And the thing is, the challenge there, I think when you're starting a company, and this is kind of a high level of what we went through, and when you start a business, I'm still very involved. I'm a day-to-day, I'm a CEO who's a hands-on CEO. So I'm very active and I talk to everybody. And I'm a big believer that you want to communicate and be that person who's willing to do whatever it takes and show your team members that you're willing to do that. I'll get on the phones too. Hey, I'll answer customer service calls. I could do it just as well and I would do it and no problem. I'm willing to help people out because I believe a CEO needs to have their finger on the pulse. But when we started out, you know everybody. You're really working with everybody in a startup situation on a day-to-day level. You're talking to everybody. I think challenges that we've experienced is as we grew, there's times when I have to step back and actually delegate and have more supervisors and managers take different positions. And I think the people who were used to talking to me on a day-to-day basis, they didn't talk to me as much. And that's the challenge you have to bridge, that gap. You want to be able to give that culture and that mindset to the managers you hire, so they can still run the company the way, you know, you want to operate it. And I think it really starts with the leader at the top. You got to be able to give that culture out and that mindset. And I would say at our company, I'm a very high energetic person. I'm very energetic, enthusiastic. And I like people who can transcend that out to the whole entire staff because that's just who I am. I need positive, upbeat people. Like I said, the biggest challenge though we've had when we grew was trying to be able to break away, still be able to talk to everybody, but then have a layers of management in between, which is just inevitable as you grow. It just has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's being able to have the new leaders that you bring on board have the same vision as you do and have that brand story filter through the company. So everybody is drinking the same Kool-Aid. Everybody yep. knows the mission, vision, the values, and they're not just words on a wall. They're not just, you know, something that's written on a plaque somewhere. There's something that are actually lived on a daily basis. I love the fact that you're saying, listen, you'll jump on a customer service call. You'll sit down and you'll talk to people on the floor. And I've watched in videos how you walk the floor and talk to people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool, is that people know they can look at the senior leadership and say they're walking the walk and they're talking the talk. They're not yeah. just saying that customer service is important and people are important and then going out and playing golf and they're never showing up. And they say, you know what? It's all about bottom line dollars. You know, suck it up. You got to have a consistent culture.
Yeah, I mean, it really starts with your people because they're the front line facing the customer and the clients. And it's easy when you're starting out and you are that front line, you can give that service because you're doing it personally. I was taking the phone calls. My wife and I were taking the customer service calls. We were doing the everything. And then how do I translate that to the people who work for me now to give that same level of customer service? Those are all challenges because if you can instill that enthusiasm among the people you hire, then you're still going to be give that level of service. And I'll tell you one thing, it's just jogged my memory. I still remember one of our first customers, we were at an event. And the customer came up to me and said, hey, you know something, Ernie? ACD, you guys are amazing. Your service is phenomenal. I've never seen anybody like it. But when you get bigger, you won't be able to keep it up. And I was offended. I was like, wait a minute. I looked him in the eye. I said, no, we'll keep it up. And you know what? I'm glad that we did. 16 years later, I'm proud to say that we do. So that was just something I remembered right now because I take it personal because it's a reflection of me and the company is I embody that.
Well, it's because it's important to you. You embody that within the entire company. And because customer service and customer experience are important things to you, and that's how you believe that the company should move forward, you're talking about that on a regular basis. And therefore, people within your company believe that and they live it. And that's an important thing. And I think that every CEO needs to have that. It's not only having the vision of this is what's important to me, it's showing everybody in the company why it's important to you mm-hmm. and enabling that and rewarding that and standing behind that. This is are the hills that I'm willing to die on.
Yeah,
so you know, these are things that are important to me.
Even today, it sounds crazy, but I take it personal. If I see somebody, if they indicate they're unhappy with what happened, may not be our fault or something, I still feel like, hey, I want to get involved. I want to know what's going on. How are we going to solve this problem? Because it's important. I don't want to be disconnected. I want to know what's going on.
Exactly. One last thing is let's talk about this Entrepreneur 360 Best Company Award, because mm-hmm. this is exciting. This is something that you get to pump up your chest and you get to sit there and say, you know what? All the hard work I've been doing and all the effort that I've made, you know, people are recognizing this. So tell me about this, about what does this award mean and what does it mean to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, Entrepreneur Magazine, they go out, have they judge a company on the five pillars, and I don't have them all in front of me here, but a lot of it's like innovation, leadership, growth, and we were just named, like this for the third time actually, to one of the best entrepreneurial companies in America, and they pick like the top 360 companies in the country, and for us, that's a huge honor because, I mean, for us, it's really all the teamwork and everything that we've built in our company. It's a testament to that because to be recognized that it shows, and like I tell people, you know what? Yeah, we win the award. We get that award for innovation and all that. But guess what? That innovation and all that hard work we're doing, we're able to give that to our clients. So when we're out meeting with a customer, we're able to say, you know, hey, we got this award. We were recognized by this, but you benefit from this because all these things, everything we do is focused around making it better for the customer. And like I said, all through teamwork, every person in our company, from customer service, quality control, accounting, everybody creates that ACD culture, image, and product that we deliver. And it's just to be honored like that. I think it's exciting for everybody in the company because it's really about what we're about in driving innovation. And I like to get our customers excited about that because they can understand that, hey, we're not sitting back and just being happy with status quo. We're always finding ways to keep moving forward.
Well, that's just it. And it gets your employees excited. It gets your customers excited. It gets your vendors excited. It allows people to know that, you know what, we're out there doing something, you know, and being recognized for it. It's not just us saying how wonderful we are. there's actually other people out there saying, you know what, you're doing a good job and you deserve to be recognized, and kudos for you. It's not just the award, it's what the award means. And the award means that you're keeping your focus on leadership, innovation, customer experience, all these things that are so important to be able to make a company better and to differentiate yourself. I keep using the word differentiation, but that's what it's all about, because there's so many companies out there that you look at them and say, yeah, okay, they're all like the same. They all do basically the same thing. Pick one, whoever's cheapest that week. But that's not the type of company that you want to be. And I applaud you for that.
Well, thanks.
You want to be the company that people sit there and say, wow, we want to deal with these people because they add real value to our life and they help us out and they make our lives better. So I want to end there by saying, is first of all, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, they can get in touch with me with by email at ebray@acdcorp.com. Or if you're in the business world, you can get to me on LinkedIn at Ernie Bray. And also on the side, I also have a blog called erniebray.com, which I actually do that for fun. I kind of write articles about business success. I talk about fitness and health. I think I'll leave it with this, is that that's another place where I'm really into is health and fitness. I think one thing people need to realize is if you're an entrepreneur out there or you're a business owner, and even if you're just anybody out there, you got to realize taking care of your health and fitness and getting proper sleep is so important to operate at optimal levels. And that's something I think in my 16-year path of building this company, there's so much stress involved with building a business. And if you sacrifice your health and you do that long enough, you're going to have problems. So never sacrifice your health. And that's a real passion of mine, is to stay healthy and really focus on fitness, because it gives me so much more energy, keeps me, you know, fired up. And it's just good, you know, to be in great shape and be healthy. So that's another area I do. So my blog is where I write some of my fun articles about just general life stuff.
I love it. And it's Ernie Bray, B-R-A-Y, but that'll be in the show notes. And we'll make sure we get all that in terms of, you know, make sure that you send me all these links and I'll make sure that I get them in the show notes. But one last question that I'm going to let you go. And this is a question I ask everybody. When you get in your car and you leave a meeting and you drive away, when you're not in the room, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and ACD when you're not there to defend yourself?
I want them to be able to say, that guy is passionate, he's driven, and he cares about what he's delivering, because I embody it. And that's what I want people to know. I'm authentic. I'm the real deal, where I talk the way I think, and I'm really being myself. And the key is I'm energetic, enthusiastic, and I want people to know that we're driven to deliver on what we promise.
Ernie, and I see that with you guys every single time I talk to you. So thank you for being you. Thanks for being authentic. Thank you for being a great information giver to my audience. You have unpacked an amazing amount of material. People are going to want to listen to this a couple times just to get everything. So thanks for being a great guest, and thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.com and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions, and leaders at any level, contact us for a free 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you for listening and sharing. And tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?